Robert Braver is with us. Robert, I appreciate you. Appreciate taking time out of your wonderful Saturday weekend to be with us.
Well, it's my pleasure, Kevin.
Now, we've never met in person, but my suspicion is you probably have a whole radio studio set up there in your house.
No, in the past I've done, you know, more television and radio things just with some of my consumer activism in some of the areas I've been involved with, but it's been actually really a number of years since I've had any kind of an interview.
And consumer activism then. It began because of your involvement with really the early evolution, would if I could put it in my layman's terms, of what became the World Wide Web?
Exactly. This is sort of a precursor. This is back in the day, really before the internet was widespread. There was a system called Usenet, and it still exists, but this was back in the day when it was a distributed, like an electronic bulletin board system. Usually, you know, colleges, institutions, running, you know, Unix servers back in the day when that was a much bigger deal than it is now. And it's kind of a distributed messaging system where you exchange what was called a news feed with other servers, and typically this would be done via like dial-up modem at, you know, in the middle of the night. A server would dial up its peers and exchange messages, and there's a protocol so that, you know, it only sends messages that the server doesn't already have. And through this means, you would post a message on your local Usenet server, and then within a day or so, your message would be distributed to, you know, thousands of servers around the world. Now, eventually, as the internet started becoming more prevalent, then the internet was connections were used more and more as the connection mechanism instead of dialing up over a modem, but it was still still is a distributed mechanism. That is where we saw
and
the
that,
first.
And that kind of started in your involvement then, started in 97 or 98, somewhere around there?
Yeah, earlier in the 90s, probably around 94, 95, when spam started happening, and this was before spam really existed in email, and that's, of course, is before people really, you know, most people had email, but on Usenet, people would start posting commercial messages, and this started with a now infamous green card lawyer spams that basically a law partnership hired some people to post a message for, you know, I guess immigration services, to get a green card, and started posting this to every single bulletin board on Usenet. And of course, this was unheard of. I mean, when I got access to Usenet through a research company affiliated with the university here, and they gave me, you know, access to dial up over my modem and get into it. I mean, it was laid down on the line that people really followed the rules, and they posted things that were on topic, and what, you know, you would be in big trouble.
So in other words, at that point, it had not evolved into a system where you were trying to solicit business?
Right. Yeah. It was shocking that someone went and plastered a message on every news group for advertising. I mean, that was unheard of. No one had ever seen that before, and the rules of etiquette were such a serious matter that, I mean, it just blew everyone away. So, and then it went downhill from there to the point where there was so much junk being posted on Usenet, it was really making it unusable. And at the time, I had a very successful software company. I had 30 employees. We were doing, you know, millions of dollars in sales, and we had a T1 internet connection, which was a pretty big deal at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to the point where I really didn't have any much to do with the day-to-day operation of the company, and I like to play and tinker and deal with stuff, and I've had kind of have a background in doing online services way back in the 80s. And so I set up, you know, some servers with my own money. I put my own servers in there and hung it off of our network. And I ended up being one of the handful of people around the world that were trusted to issue these special cancel messages so that when someone would post the same message on multiple forums, irrespective of content, it had nothing to do with whether it was commercial or whatever, it was just the criteria that had been agreed upon as far as what constituted abuse, was posting the same message repeatedly over a certain threshold over a certain period of time. And I had developed, with the help of other people, algorithms that would detect, in many cases, auto-detect these messages, present them to review, and either myself or my wife would go in and inspect these messages and then issue these special cancel messages that would then propagate out and remove these messages from servers. And it's myself and a number of other people that were doing this. So that's just kind of
So that's really what drew your interest to the abuse, if you will, of a public medium.
Exactly, and that's just one of those things where, you know, I had an opportunity to step up and actually do something about it. And that's something that few people have the time or the resources to do, and just the way, you know, I'm wired up, that, you know, that's something that appeals to me. Hey, this is something no one else seems to be, or very few people seem to be stepping up and doing something about it. This is something that, you know, I am blessed to have the time and the money and the resources that, and the gumption to go and do it. So hey, I'm going to step up and do
it. So this really moved then into much greater things as the internet expanded, moved into email spam, junk faxes, telemarketing.
Right. Yeah. Around 97, I got fed up with companies that would repeatedly call me to solicit me, and I would ask, you know, as sweet as sugar, hey, I'm really not interested. I really prefer not getting these calls. Would you please not call me? And of course, I didn't even know at the time that there were laws, the Telephone Consumer Protection Act, a federal law, went into place in the early 90s, and by this time the law had been on the books for several years. I didn't even know about it. A lot of people didn't know about it, and I realized that was actually illegal. If you tell someone not to call you anymore on a commercial solicitation, they can't call you anymore. They have to put you on a do not call list and maintain that for 10 years. And
so you're in Oklahoma. Indiana has no call list, for instance, where you sign up, you put your name on it, and the solicitors are not supposed to be able to call you. Is the same thing true in Oklahoma?
Well, it is. Yes. What happened was, is under the federal law, the law, the Telephone Consumer Protection Act, which is part of the Communications Act broadly, which is where the FCC has its authority. The FCC had the authority back in when this was done in the very early 90s to do a national do not call list. Or to have, let's say, a little symbol by your directory listing in the phone book to indicate you don't want solicitation calls. So, but the FCC was given a fair amount of latitude to do a rulemaking and come up with the actual rules within the framework of what the statute says the FCC has the authority to do. And initially, the FCC decided we are not going to do a national do not call list. But a number of states, including Oklahoma, did implement that prior to the national do not call list.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
What happened was, is later the FCC had another rulemaking proceeding, still under the Telephone Consumer Protection Act, to amend or add rules to go in conjunction with the FTC to go ahead and implement a national do not call registry. So the FCC had the authority.
Go ahead.
They had the authority all along to do that. They chose not to. They also had the authority to require certain things with, you know, the caller ID. Initially, they declined to do that because by then the technology was not as universal as it is now. And then so later on, 10 years, 15 years later, they had another rulemaking, and they did add additional rules requiring that, yes, if you're a telemarketer, you have to transmit caller ID information that actually has your company name, so people know, things like that. So there are rules. But, yeah, it floored me in around 97 when I realized I'm getting all these calls. This is a law that's been on the books for 4 or 5 years now, and pretty much every one of these calls is violating federal law, not to mention the pre-recorded calls, which in addition to being flat-out prohibited under the federal law, under many state laws, including Oklahoma laws, it's a criminal offense you can actually go to prison for a year. And if you don't say who you are in your message, you can actually go to prison for 2 years for that. And yet, most if not all of these calls violated that. And so it just warned me
that nobody... So you actually brought action, though. I mean, not just talking. You brought action. And one of those was against Robert Soloway?
Yes. Well, that was later. That was under the CAN Spam Act and the Oklahoma law that deals with fraudulent email. So, yeah, that's just part of the evolution. In 97, 98, I started filing lawsuits against telemarketers that were just flagrantly breaking the law. And this is, of course, I don't just willy-nilly sue someone. I mean, this is after I talked to him on the phone. I'm reasonable. I'm not just here to go and pounce on someone. And the reason why I get up front, that when I did this, I was a successful business person. I had a very healthy six-figure income. I make that point because when a consumer like me goes out and starts suing a bunch of telemarketers, I'm immediately labeled as a professional plaintiff, someone that is trying to make trap and make a buck off of honest business people, that are just trying to make a living and stuff like that. And it's not like that at all. If anything, pursuing this hurt me and my business because it did create a little bit of a rift between myself and my business partners when people tried to come after me and even come after my company, which I owned half of. And so it had detrimental effects on me, but I was very successful when I started doing this.
Will you stay with us? We've got a commercial message, and we'll be right back. My guest is Robert Braver from Oklahoma, talking about unscrupulous marketing. We'll be right back.
There's much more to come on Kevin Smith Reports right after this.
Hi, I'm Michelle Reese, owner of Perkins Restaurant and Bakery in Anderson, Indiana. I welcome you to come in for an awesome omelet or choose our country fried steak biscuit platter. Breakfast is just the beginning. Try our homestyle pot roast, grilled pork chops, a chicken pot pie, or a burger and fries, and much more. Don't forget our fresh pies, muffins, and cookies made fresh daily. Also, our 99-cent dessert special on Sundays and Wednesdays from 4 to 9 p.m. Breakfast is just the beginning at Perkins Restaurant and Bakery on Scatterfield Road in Anderson. See you soon.
Just look at the workmanship in this remodeled home. From every angle, you can see that attention to detail is what sets Gardner Construction apart.
We are so happy with the way our room turned out. Rick Gardner and his team did a fabulous job, and they kept us within budget.
Gardner Construction specializes in all types of renovations and additions, as well as complete homes and freestanding garages.
We at Gardner Construction look forward to working with you.
You always get higher-end details, but not higher-end costs. With Gardner Construction, call us today.
Did you know that employees of West Electric receive more than 8,000 hours of on-the-job training? And they complete nearly 1,200 hours of classroom instruction, so you know they're extremely good at what they do. West Electric sends only the highest skilled labor to do the job, whether it's a home improvement project or a large industrial job. West Electric will work within your budget to complete your electrical project on time and with safety in mind.
Call West Electric at 643-6444 or visit their website at westelectricinc.com. When you need a tow, here's where to go. AWS, Anderson Wrecker Service. They're locally owned and operated, and they can handle all your light and heavy-duty towing needs. They do flatbed and motorcycle hauling, plus they've got a well-lit, secure lot for vehicle storage. Swift and friendly, always ready, 24 hours a day. Call Anderson Wrecker Service at 644-3339 and look for the big white trucks. Call 644-3339. AWS, Anderson Wrecker Service.
You're listening to Kevin Smith Reports.
Robert Braver is my guest on the program in hour number two. Robert is a businessman, an entrepreneur, obviously was involved with the Internet before it was the Internet, computer technology. I think he became very frustrated with the abuses of the Internet, and also then led to telemarketing issues, which were also a problem, and he took action against some of them. Is that a fair fair can of where we were at?
I think so, yes.
Okay. There are some interesting things that you then uncovered, because there's telephone solicitation, which we just started to talk about before the break. There are times where it's okay to call people on the phone, and then there's times when it's actually an abuse. Now, how do you measure that difference?
Well, it depends, and of course, different people have different opinions on them, but there have been, you know, many studies have shown that most people really don't like telemarketing calls. And I'm one of them. But of course, we're in a free society, and we have, you know, there has to be some balancing of interests. So we have rules now that say if you are going to telemarket, first of all, you know, it needs to be a live person. You can't do an unsolicited pre-recorded commercial message. That is flat out illegal. You cannot send an unsolicited facsimile advertisement. That is strictly prohibited. And then as far as what is permitted, okay, yes, you can make a live operator telemarketing call to a residence, but you have to do this. You have to say who you are. You have to provide an address or phone number. And yet that has to be volunteered. You don't have to, the person you're calling doesn't have to ask for it. That has to be in the script. You have to have policies and procedures that meet certain minimum requirements as far as maintaining a do not call list and making sure that you do all the things that you're supposed to do. That has to be a written policy that is available upon demand, and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
So there are rules. And you know what? If people follow the rules, I don't have a problem with that. That's fine. But the problem I have is when so many people don't. And in the case of the Telephone Consumer Protection Act, for example, as well as some of the spam laws, both the state laws and the federal CAN Spam Act, a big part of the enforcement of that isn't the government, it is the private citizen. There is a private right of action where you can sue for damages, and not only can you sue for damages, you can sue and get an injunction, which is where the court says, hey, you
got to stop.
You better stop, yep. Or there's going to be consequences.
Now that brings you into, though, telemarketing that you explored even further, and that's where the Anderson, Indiana connection comes in.
Yes.
Because you had a call from a group called Dogs Against Drugs, Dogs Against Crime.
Yes.
DADDAC, as it's referred to.
Right.
And then you had an email exchange with one of the representatives of the company. Tell us,
yes,
about that a little bit.
Well, yeah, and charitable calls generally do not fall under the Telephone Consumer Protection Act. So they are permitted. There is no do not call list. Or they don't have to abide by the national do not call list now under the FTC rules. If you tell a charity not to call you again, they're supposed to knock it off. But there's really no private enforcement. All you can do is complain to the FTC and hope they do something about it. But they're probably not, just because they can't deal with everything. But the problem is that a lot of these, when you get calls from these types of organizations, typically, that are doing these telephone appeals, like the Reserve Law Officers Association or the Disabled, most of these are actually professional fundraisers, and they are keeping 85% or more of the gross they keep, and then the organization only gets pennies on the dollar.
Now, how is that ethical?
Well, It's not. And if you ask anybody, if you look at the Better Business Bureau's Guide to Charitable Giving, if you look at any of the other GuideStars guidelines, even what the FTC tells people, it's actually the opposite. A charitable organization that is considered a good steward of your money and mine when we give, because we do, they're expected to have their overhead, including fundraising expenses, of no more than 15%, and so 85% goes to the actual organization.
Okay. So what'd you uncover in the case of DADDAC?
Well,
and it's obviously based in Anderson, Indiana.
Yes, the problem I have is that, well, first of all, many states have laws on the books, including Oklahoma's, that says if you're a professional telemarketer and you're doing a telephone appeal for a charity, you cannot keep more than 15%. So the law follows what are the guidelines. Unfortunately, there was a Supreme Court case, and this was something you could go to prison for, by the way. A Supreme Court case said, actually, that is unconstitutional on the charity's free speech. They have a right to do it, and even if it is totally lopsided and they really aren't getting very much of the money, if that's the only way, it has a chilling effect on free speech. And when I actually read the opinion on that, at first I thought this is outrageous. I mean, how can you justify that? When I read the reasoning behind it, I actually kind of get it, and that's just part of the price we pay for holding the right to free speech so in such high esteem here in our country, and so I think it's the right thing. However, that does not give an organization the right to basically defraud the people they're calling and by misleading them. Now, it's one thing for them to not volunteer that, hey, yeah, we're saying, yeah, we do these things, but not bothering to mention that we only give 15 cents on the dollar to the organization. Okay, that's okay. They can do that. What they can't do is make other statements in the call that misleads you. And that's where I have a problem with Dogs Against Drugs, Dogs Against Crime, because I sent an email. First of all, if I wasn't willing to make a pledge right then and there, I wasn't going to get the information. I had to, like, the guy was getting off the phone. I had to, like, jump to say, whoa, wait a second, you know, who are you? What's your, you know, who? And so I got the website, and I was able to figure out, okay, here's who these people are. I started asking some questions, and I was given this whole litany of things that they provide, drug dogs to police departments in Oklahoma that can't afford to get them. They have, you know, they do these programs in the schools, and so they do all these wonderful things. And to make a long story short, and this is documented, I made a little web page to kind of expose this.
And go ahead and give that website out now.
Yeah, it is charityscam.com. So just the two words together, charityscam.com. And so I just did this just because it's something, I don't have the kind of time that I used to have, but I was able to spend a few hours to just throw this website together just because I think exposure to the light of day is a disinfectant, as they say. And I just felt that by kind of putting this out there, it would just help. You know, if someone Googles it, it might help attract some attention. You certainly ran across this, so and that's why we're talking here today. So, I have several real problems with what they're doing. First of all, being skeptical, I asked the questions that the FTC tells you should be asking as a consumer, as a donor, someone who's going to take your hard-earned dollars and give it to someone to do some good with it.
Well, the charityscam.com, obviously Anderson, Indiana is mentioned in notoriety because the director, president and national director, is named as Darren Sparks of the Anderson Police Department. He happens to be chief of police of the Anderson Police Department.
Yeah. And I have a real problem with this because to me, it's really disgraceful when a consumer like me has asked the questions that we're supposed to ask. I have email exchange with their office, and I'm corresponding with Jenny Sparks, who I'm guessing might be Darren's wife. And my questions are dodged; they're not answered. I'm taken to task for calling them a scam, and why, we're great people. Why are you disparaging us? And but you're not answering my questions. And when I, you know, and your telemarketer made these claims that are demonstrably not true, which is not legal. That is fraud. And there have been lawsuits by attorney generals for this exact kind of thing, and that has been upheld by the United States Supreme Court as yes, actually no. Even though we've, you know, charities have a lot of leeway, they can't do that.
Well,
and
do you feel like with the conversation that you've had back and forth with Dad Dak and Jenny Sparks, that you have enough to seek some type of suit against them for falsely stating what their mission is?
Well, there's no unlike the telemarketing calls, things like that, there is no private right of action. There are no statutory damages where I can go out and I don't have the power to do that. That would be something that our attorney general here in Oklahoma would do, or the attorney general in Indiana. Or any state where they're making calls into, but if you there is a case where the Illinois Attorney General went after an organization, and basically the same fact pattern. Is it one of these scams where they're not, the very little money actually goes to the organization, and in spite of all the leeway that charities have because the First Amendment issues, the Supreme Court found. United States Supreme Court found that no, they do not have the right to make misrepresentations and mislead people, and I read this Supreme Court case that clarified this, it's really the same type of situation that we have here. And the thing that gets me about Mr. Sparks and the other people that are on the DADAC board of directors is that, you know, their names are here, are prominently listed, and that you would think, gee, if the chief of police of Anderson, Indiana is the present national director, you know, they've got to be on the up and up, and they're not. And what gets me is that when it became apparent that I wasn't getting answers from Jenny Sparks, I copied, because their email addresses are right there on their website, I copied all of these people on these emails.
Mm-hmm.
And to this day, months later, after numerous emails back and forth, and my mentioning in these emails, why am I not hearing from you guys? I mean, I'm raising some serious issues here.
You do, and on this website that you have, which again is charityscam.com, you have that DADDAC, Dawgs Against Drugs, directed by Anderson Police Department Chief of Police Darren Sparks. This actually only 15 cents of every dollar that's donated goes to the company. The rest goes to the telemarketing firm.
Right.
So it says in 2009, the IRS Form 990 shows a total of donations over $1 million. But reveals only $3,500 that was paid out by DADDAC in grants, and only $11,000 in canine training equipment.
Right, exactly. And when I specifically asked, okay, your caller made these specific statements about drug dogs for police departments in Oklahoma, after numerous emails. They were not able to provide me with a single police department in Oklahoma that has ever received a canine.
Being in Oklahoma, you get a call from DADDAC, Darren Sparks Group,
right,
soliciting money, and they're telling you that, yes, this money's going to buy dogs in Oklahoma, train dogs, provide all these wonderful services to keep our schools safe.
And also to do demonstrations in the schools where the officers come out to the
schools. But the truth was, none of that money went to Oklahoma. There was no money paid out to Oklahoma by DADDAC.
Not that they were able to tell me, confirm.
Okay.
And
they
of course,
didn't tell you that.
And you look at your IRS Form 990, and if you look at the numbers that you just cited, I mean, that's nothing. I mean, there's nothing in their IRS Form 990 that substantiates that they're doing this. And they were unable to identify a single police department that received a drug dog. They were not able to identify a single police department in the state of Oklahoma that has ever so much as received a pamphlet or a coloring book, the materials for their puppy patrol program. That they can't even show me where they've spent a dollar for any kind of materials handed out to kids in the schools. And interesting, I didn't bring up DARE, which is another well-known organization that's involved in this.
Okay.
I didn't bring that up. They started bringing up DARE. It says, well, you just don't like us because we're not as well-known as DARE. I'm going, where did that come from? But then I said, well, now that you mention it, though, I can, in 2 minutes, I can do a Google search. I can go to DARE's website and see that they spend a tiny percentage of their revenues on fundraising and administrative expenses. I mean, well over 90%, if I recall correctly, of their overall contributions and receipts, it directly goes out to programs.
Let me ask, if there, and I have tax returns in front of me for 2008 for Dad DAC, for instance. In 2007, they raised from citizens like you and I more than $1 million. In 2008, more than $1 million. But they paid for professional fundraising fees almost $1 million each one of those years. So
right.
Who is this professional fundraising outfit? Is there a connection between them and some of these groups?
I don't know. You know what the deal is. I mean, it sure stinks. I have not delved into it. Maybe somebody else will. I don't have the kind of time and resources that I used to, but I don't get it. It just doesn't make any sense. So I don't want to infer that there's something else going on because I just don't know, and I can't substantiate it, and I'm not going to make claims like that.
Right,
substantiate.
Right. Well, Dad DAC, I might list I might mention, is on apparently the state of Oregon, their attorney general's top 20 list of worst charities.
Yes.
And so that's. Obviously, there are other states that have paid attention to this. It's a shame that Anderson, Indiana, has been brought this attention, and the chief of police of the Anderson Police Department. I apologize for that.
Well, it happens, and it's not anything against Anderson, Indiana, but you would think that, I mean, if I were a citizen of Anderson, Indiana, and my chief of police were associated with an organization that is calling people up on the phone and making misrepresentations. Okay,
I'd be concerned.
Let's say this is a...
Hey, will you stay with me, Robert? We've
sure.
got to take a commercial break. Robert Braver is my guest from Oklahoma. This is Kevin Smith. We'll be back in just a moment.
Kevin Smith reports.
Warm weather can wreak havoc on your car, so make sure you keep your vehicle properly maintained to ensure a safe and hassle-free summer. This is Jeff Parker of T&J Tire, and I want to get your car ready for the hot days of summer. Rising temperatures can take a toll on your engine, battery, and tires. So this summer, keep your car rolling and your air conditioner blowing cold at T&J Tire. T&J Tire, located at 100 West 9th Street in downtown Anderson. We're open Monday through Friday, 7:30 to 5:30, and Saturdays, 8 to noon.
Hi, I'm Michelle Reese, owner of Perkins Restaurant and Bakery in Anderson, Indiana. I welcome you to come in for an awesome omelet or choose our country fried steak biscuit platter. Breakfast is just the beginning. Try our homestyle pot roast, grilled pork chops, a chicken pot pie, or a burger and fries, and much more. Don't forget our fresh pies, muffins, and cookies made fresh daily. Also, our 99-cent dessert special. On Sundays and Wednesdays from 4 to 9 p.m. Breakfast is just the beginning at Perkins Restaurant and Bakery on Scatterfield Road in Anderson. See you soon.
Just look at the workmanship in this remodeled home. From every angle, you can see that attention to detail is what sets Gardner Construction apart.
We are so happy with the way our room turned out. Rick Gardner and his team did a fabulous job, and they kept us within budget.
Gardner Construction specializes in all types of renovations and additions, as well as complete homes and freestanding garages.
We at Gardner Construction look forward to working with you.
You always get higher-end details, but not higher-end costs. With Gardner Construction, call us today.
Did you know that employees of West Electric receive more than 8,000 hours of on-the-job training? And they complete nearly 1,200 hours of classroom instruction, so you know they're extremely good at what they do. West Electric sends only the highest skilled labor to do the job, whether it's a home improvement project or a large industrial job. West Electric will work within your budget to complete your electrical project on time and with safety in mind.
Call West Electric at 643-6444 or visit their website at westelectricinc.com.
You're listening to Kevin Smith Reports on News Talk 1240 WHBU.
Kevin Smith, my guest, is on the line with us today. Fine gentleman that is really upset about corruption as it relates to first spam and the internet, and now telephone solicitation. Robert Braver from Oklahoma. Thank you very much, Robert, for being with us today.
You're welcome. My pleasure, Kevin.
What can we do about folks that are soliciting our dollars? Because I get maybe 100, which would be an exaggeration. I get multiple requests through the mail, some on the telephone during the week, saying, "Hey, we're a good group. I'm a nice person. You know, we need your money." How can consumers check out and protect themselves?
Well, there's a number of ways. You can do a Google search. I did and was able to find these some of the things you've mentioned about the Oregon Top 20 Worst Charities list and a few other places where DADAC has been mentioned in the media in negative light because of these types of issues. Check them out. You know, the way I see it is that every dollar. Yeah, I have a finite budget, as we all do, for charitable donations. We all want to do good, and so that's where it really kind of irks me when someone calls you up on the phone, takes advantage of your goodwill and our charitable spirit as a country, and outright lies to you, defrauds you by making serious misrepresentations about what this money is going for, on top of just being inefficient with your money, which they can legally do. They don't have to volunteer that, okay, fine. But when they lie to you about it, when you ask them or when they tell you about these things that they do when they actually don't, the problem I have with that is that is money, every dollar that is given to them, I mean, that's a dollar that is not going to another charity where they are good stewards of your hard-earned dollar, where they do use the money the way they tell you they use it. And that's what really gets to me, because really they're stealing from legitimate charitable organizations. And that's where this kind of really gets my goat. And the thing to do, that to answer your question, is you just have to check them out. You know, never agree to or pledge money to an organization that if you have not checked them out and
right.
Look to see what they do. There is a website called I believe it's GuideStar, and you might Google it for the exact name, but they actually have the IRS Form 990s, or most of them they actually collect and have available there.
And I might add that is GuideStar. .org, and that's GUIDESTAR.org, and you can check not for profits and their report.
Yeah, that's a really good idea. The Better Business Bureau is also can be helpful, but definitely check a couple things and just make sure that your money is actually going is being used for what they say they're going to use it for, and that they're good stewards of your money. They're using it efficiently, and really your guideline is you really don't want more than 15% of your money being used for overhead. You really want most of that,
right,
at least 85%, going to the actual
and
programs.
GuideStar is listed, Dogs Against Drugs is listed the GuideStar, so the public can find out more information about it from there. Thank
Great.
You very much, Robert. I appreciate your time this morning. If you find out more information about this company that's taking nearly $1 million of dollars a year for just making the telephone calls for Dogs Against Drugs, let me know.
I sure
We'd
will.
Like to follow up.
All right.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
It's
Robert,
my pleasure, Kevin.
Absolutely. Robert Braver from Oklahoma, and we appreciate his time on the station today. See, and the Somebody said, look, we need help in finding out what the problems are and what the solutions are. Just don't say there's a problem. Well, here we've identified two problems this morning. One, we've identified treatment of CATS bus drivers for the City of Anderson Transportation System and the political environment that Missy felt she was involved in. And then number two, the chief of police under the Ockham administration now tied in with Dogs Against Drugs, and that most of the money that's solicited via the telephone actually goes to a telemarketing company and does not go to dogs. It does not go to deter crime. It does not go into schools. It does not go to help children. Why is it that Anderson, Indiana is noteworthy of that? Maybe it would be that some people prefer that this not be known.
It all stinks to high heaven.
378-2086 is our neighborhood line. 1-800-578-1240 is our suburban line. Feel free to call. I went to a great website this week, Todd. And anyone can go to it, because this information is from the IEDC, the Indiana Economic Development Corporation, and it's loosely affiliated, or it is affiliated with the state of Indiana. These are the folks that are driven to put job packages together, bring new jobs, new companies, new growth, whether they're new to Indiana or they're existing companies. These are the people that work with counties, towns, and cities throughout the state of Indiana. The IEDC. Again, you can go to the website yourself and look at it. And what we were looking at, because I heard someone say that, it was the current mayor was talking about job growth.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the perception has been that since ManCor, since Nestle, since Affiliated Computer Services, ACS, since Northstar Aerospace, since Alter Nano, that really there has been little job growth in Anderson, Indiana. And I heard him say different than that, that, you know, things are booming. So I went to the IEDC website to look up new job announcements for Indiana counties, and what I wanted to focus on is Anderson really versus surrounding counties and how we've been doing. Madison County versus surrounding counties. And that would be for the entire county. So let me get to that when we get back from this brief commercial message. We're going to talk about what the numbers are, the cold realities that you can check out yourself. We'll be back in 60 seconds. State of Indiana website, the IEDC, and it lists by year the job counts, the investment, in the counties, all 92 counties around the state of Indiana. And we'll be back. This is Kevin Smith.
When you need a tow, here's where to go. AWS, Anderson Wrecker Service. They're locally owned and operated, and they can handle all your light and heavy-duty towing needs. They do flatbed and motorcycle hauling, plus they've got a well-lit, secure lot for vehicle storage. Swift and friendly, always ready 24 hours a day. Call Anderson Wrecker Service at 644-3339. Look for the big white trucks. Call 644-3339. That's AWS, Anderson Wrecker Service.
Warm weather can wreak havoc on your car, so make sure you keep your vehicle properly maintained to ensure a safe and hassle-free summer. This is Jeff Parker of T&J Tire, and I want to get your car ready for the hot days of summer. Rising temperatures can take a toll on your engine, battery, and tires. So this summer, keep your car rolling and your air conditioner blowing cold at T&J Tire. T&J Tire, located at 100 West 9th Street in downtown Anderson. We're open Monday through Friday, 7:30 to 5:30, and Saturdays, 8 to noon.
You're listening to Kevin Smith Reports.
Thank you for staying with us for the wind down of hour number two of Kevin Smith Reports. Thank you for being with us. We appreciate that. And again, we're followed by a couple of fellows that are seeking elected office. So I invite you to listen to our program and then listen to the second and the third. You make your comparisons, make the calls, make...
Sure, if you want strictly political content coming up.
Yeah, absolutely. Getting back to where we were before, let me say this again. Please, any of you who have a computer, you can go there and look at the same numbers that I'm looking at that are printed out in front of me. State of Indiana, go to the Indiana Corporation for Economic Development, their economic development website, and they actually list new job counts by counties now across the state of Indiana. Anderson, obviously, is in Madison County, so there could be things included in there from Elwood, Alexandria, Pendleton also, which would make, obviously, Madison County more robust in its job counts. But what I found interesting is, starting in 2007, because of the statement that was made, starting in 2007, Madison County had job commitment totals of 521 jobs. That was the last year of the Smith administration. 521 announced for that year, I assume. The investment was $9 million in that year. And then I go over to 2008, because we know from your research, Todd, that the Nestle project, for instance, was announced in 2006.
Mm-hmm. October 06.
Construction was throughout 2007, and I think the ribbon cutting grand opening was in 2008. So we go from job announcements in Madison County of 521, 9 million, to the next year in 2008, the job total goes down to 323, but the investment is $224,990,732. That's a lot of money invested in Madison County. And looking at that $224 million, what you're looking at then is property taxes collected on the value of that investment, because they have to pay those dollars to build a building. The assessed value of the property goes up. We collect a greater amount of property tax that way. And I think if we go to the Madison County government website and look at who the highest tax payers are in Madison County, that we're going to find Nestle at number one or number two for this past year. So we know it was a good investment from tax wise and tax we collected. It's also a good investment for people that now have a job that otherwise didn't. We're a regional employer. People came from Marion, Alexandria, everywhere to work. Mm-hmm. So we're reestablishing that good reputation for Madison County. But here's the item. If you'll look at 2007, 8, 9, 10, you will see that from 2007, because there was an election year then, 2008, 9, and 10, for the numbers that are available, every year, 8, 9, and 10, the new job number announcements have declined significantly.
Mm-hmm.
They have declined significantly. You can go on the website, look at this information yourself. Draw your own conclusions. My point is, we had a great team in place that produced good product. the good product that we were able to produce were these new businesses that came in. Now, some would argue, well, they all didn't pay $26 an hour. No, they didn't. We have to have an array of employment opportunities, one. That's the first thing. Tell some guy that does blue lights under the bridge, you know.
You remember that?
Yeah, I do. Tell somebody that doesn't have a job. It's like somebody making the statement, well, people aren't interested in a part-time job. I beg to differ. We had, of course, the first hour we were talking about people needing jobs, and, oh, well, she was not politically connected. There was no Friends and Family Plan. It was under the Smith administration. She was qualified to be a driver for public transportation, for a bus. She went in, applied, and got a job. She had the background. It was necessary.
Mm-hmm.
So my point is, people do want jobs, whether it's part-time or full-time, because she was hired in at part-time. I heard somebody say last week, well, we hired somebody back that had been fired for pouring sidewalks right in front of their house, but we gave him a part-time job and no one would want it. I'm sorry. Missy was a great example of a person who wanted a job, and it was a part-time job. And there were not political connections there. Jobs are important to a community. The measurement, like I say, talk is cheap. Anybody can sit behind this microphone and make any claims. They can talk about all types of different issues. Truth is, measure their past works and deeds. Were jobs created? Yes or no? Were streets swept every year? Yes or no? Was beautification part of the plan every year, not just an election year? Yes or no? Did the park system expand because of quality of life initiatives? Yes or no? Not just putting up basketball goals in election year. It's important that these things occur every year and seek the best qualified people that are available to come to work. Do they have the right credentials? If you're going to put them in as city controller, did they graduate from high school, which is a great thing to graduate from high school, or do they have a PhD in finance? Simple. Very simple. Thank you, and visit our websites, any of them. Kevin Smith Reports is a good place to start. We'll be back next week. Thank you.